Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Felcha, welcome to the Village Oak Tree. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell. Thank you for joining me once again. In my continuing podcast, Push People Into Standing Up Against Tyranny, as I promised, I'll be talking about global migrations today. I have a handful of news stories I found in the last week that show us just how cruel governments around the world are becoming with regard to all these mass migrations that have been taking place for decades now, along with a little history to show that this is not a new thing, and offer some practical solutions to that we know these governments will never put into practice. But first, I have a programming note for everyone. I want to let everybody know that YouTube started censoring me again as of last weekend. Maybe because I'm publicly advocating for a peaceful rebellion against the authoritarians who are subverting the American democracy that veterans like myself fought, bled, and died for on battlefields across the world and at home. And or they don't like it when I make statements supporting the Palestinians while condemning Israel and its Western backers for committing genocide in Palestine, or all the above. Google and its subsidiary YouTube, along with so many other global corporations, have been accused of materially supporting genocide in Palestine by UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese in a special report given to the UN Human Rights Council last week. So they and all their other global corporations named in this report may be cracking down on dissent. It may be none of that. It may be just as simple as no one is watching my YouTube videos. Whatever the reason, please support what I'm doing by engaging me to show platforms like YouTube that we don't like corporate authoritarians any more than we like government authoritarians. Go find the Village Oak Tree on YouTube and like, subscribe, comment, and generally support my efforts there so little people like myself can keep fighting against the authoritarians. Even if you don't watch a whole video, since you can find it on Substack as well, engage with me to keep it available for those who don't want to sign up for Substack. The more we fight back, using whatever means at our disposal, the more we, the people, can stop them from taking our civil liberties and human rights away from us. Now that I got that out of the way, gather around, sit you down somewhere comfortable for a bit. Let me tell you about global migrations around the world. Let's start with a little history, shall we? As far back in time as anyone can remember and can think of, humans have been migrating across land masses of the world. No one can dispute that. The difference in modern times, and I bracket that to within the last 30 years, is that due to the ever-increasing threat of global warming, wars in South and Central America, the Middle East, and Africa over resources and colonialism, more and more people from these regions have been migrating to the global north. First, I want to focus on Europe, as their migration issues have been in the news for decades. Mostly because of their more liberal social services that a lot of them started enacting back in the 1970s and beyond. All these poor refugees heard about these social services and migrated to Europe by the millions now to take advantage of the services in the more robust economies. For anyone who's been paying attention to the news these last few decades, they may have heard about Greece's issue with all these refugees coming across from North Africa, causing the people to riot, and there has been a lot of controversy over sunk migrant boats and violence against these migrants and so on. Italy, Spain, France, Britain, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, Ireland, and the Baltic countries have all had bad experiences in dealing with all these undocumented refugees entering their countries and applying for their generous social safety nets with no jobs or other basic necessities. Some of these countries have had to deal with Islamic extremists and criminal gangs showing up and creating havoc amongst the normal populations. Riots have broken out, most recently within the last couple of weeks in the north of Ireland and Spain over migrants overwhelming social services and committing crimes. These European countries no longer have the ability to take care of all these refugees that are still streaming out of Africa and the Middle East. The people born there are fighting back against their government's liberal policies. They're accepting all these refugees. Social healthcare systems, once touted as the best things in sliced bread, have fallen into disarray because governments don't have the money to fund their government-run healthcare systems anymore. England's NHS is one perfect example. Denmark, Germany, Austria, France, Ireland, Spain, and so on are all experiencing a decline in health services due to being overwhelmed. Then there's the matter of housing, or lack thereof. Unless you have a huge amount of money. And even that doesn't matter sometimes, as I'll talk about a little later on. Europe is experiencing an acute housing shortage everywhere. In some countries, it's downright unhealthy. One of the biggest issues that's not talked about much, unless you live in Europe, are the predatory real estate developers. Some are Americans, but most of them are Europeans using the American model. They swoop in, scoop up properties, remodel them a little bit, or not, and rent them out at exorbitant rental rates to whomever can pay the price. Mostly only to the wealthiest or to governments looking to house all these migrants they felt sorry for. This practice creates a housing shortage, which drives up the prices and so on. All this does is shut out the less wealthy and poor who have lived in these respective countries for generations, forcing a lot of them to immigrate to other countries, which creates a housing and social services shortage there. You see a pattern here? And it's only getting worse around the world. Young people from all over Europe are leaving the EU for greener pastures or to where they think is greener. Since I'm an Irish American, I pay a lot of attention to Irish news. So let me provide you with some examples from Ireland to emphasize my point. Ireland, both in the north and the south for different reasons, is experiencing a severe housing and healthcare shortage due to the sheer number of immigrants the current government's let in over the last 20 years or so. They're now claiming this last week that they have 5.1 million people in Ireland right now, which is still below pre-famine numbers of over 7 million before the 1840s. I don't see how that's a good thing, considering that they were barely able to handle what they had before they started letting in all these people from around the world. The worst part is that because the north of Ireland is a UK Commonwealth, migrants who can't get ahead in England have been riding the ferries across the Irish Sea to the north and walking across the border into the Republic until lately. The Guard in the south has been stepping up border enforcement a lot more lately, but it's already too late. Now there are small protests and riots taking place in the smaller villages and in Dublin neighborhoods because the native indigenous Irish people fear losing their Irish identity to all these new people bringing their cultures to Ireland and supplanting theirs. But mostly it's about the economy, like most things everywhere. With the government spending all their extra money trying to take care for these immigrants they let in, they aren't spending money on social infrastructure issues elsewhere, such as housing and healthcare. There's an upsurge of people wanting to learn or relearn their Gaelic language, making road signs and such dual language and so on. It's starting to get very contentious in Ireland because the current governments aren't doing enough to fight the uptick in crime and poverty. Dublin has had a problem with migrant housing for a while now, making them sleep in tents in one of their parks. The same issue is taking place in multiple European countries right now. Britain and France just concluded a new deal with regard to illegal immigrants crossing the channel between their two countries because Britain, being an island nation, can't handle all these refugees coming to France to get to England. France is so desperate to stem the tide, they're now sending out divers with knives to sink the rubber boats before they get too close to shore. And again, I've got news stories to back this stuff up, and I'll link them here in the Substack article just to kind of give you an idea, and you can read them as you wish. Greece has now suspended all asylum applications for those arriving in boats from North Africa. Now, it's not the first time they've done this, but they just did it again. Italy has enacted draconian policies regarding all the illegal migrants in the last several years. Poland has just recently closed their borders to Germany to try and stem the overflow of illegal immigrants crossing the borders there. All of this is just from the news stories I picked out in the last week. Imagine multiplying this by the hundreds of thousands of people over the last 20 to 30 years that have migrated to EU countries. Most of this mass migration is a direct result of the West wars in the Middle East and Africa over resources. It started out mostly about...
Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Oil, but also became about mineral resources from Africa as well. The indigenous peoples finally got tired of the Europeans taking advantage of them, and they started rebelling, which caused worse poverty than what they already had been enduring, which caused these people to leave their war-ravaged homes to seek a better life in the global north, a vicious cycle that continues today. Then there are the morbidly wealthy. I'm going to tell you about a recent story in the news, mostly American news, about a wealthy celebrity who got into a public tiff with Donald Trump a few years ago that has now resulted in herself leaving the U.S. to immigrate to Ireland recently. But first, I want to offer some more background on the acute housing situation in Ireland and around the world in general. Ireland has suffered from mass immigrations for nearly 200 years since the famous Irish famine of the 1840s and beyond. They call it An Gorta Mór, which translates to, in English, the Great Hunger. After the Irish Rebellion of 1916 and the subsequent Civil War in the 1920s that devastated Ireland, the Patriots made a deal with England, who was already suffering badly from World War I, to set up their own government, which with the partition in the north. That's a very short description of how the Irish Republic got its start, and I'm not here to debate one thing or another about all of that. Look it all up in the history books if you want to learn more. The current Irish Republic government, in its infinite wisdom, thought a few years ago that they needed more people in Ireland to offset the declining population. So, like so many other European countries, they opened their immigration system to accept more refugees, feeling sorry for them. The trouble is, they, like the Canadians, didn't think far enough ahead and didn't study human nature very well. So now, these EU countries and the Canadians have found out the hard way what happens when you open your borders to those refugees you feel sorry for. Once the refugees see a green light and the open doors, they pour through by any means possible. They come by small boats across the seas. They come by paid human traffickers, by truck, motor car, by foot. They don't care, because to them, living in abject poverty in places like England, Germany, France, Spain, Italy, and Ireland are still better than where they came from. At least no one is trying to drop bombs on them or shoot them. That's a step up in their book. The opposite of that is the mass exodus of the young people who can afford to leave their countries to live elsewhere because of the lack of housing, healthcare, and jobs, which have been taken up by all these migrants. The government feels sorry for them and gave them priority services over the native-borns, who have subsequently left for places like Australia, Canada, and New Zealand, and other places in Europe. I bet you thought I was going to add the United States into that list, but you would be wrong. Europeans are no longer flocking to the U.S. anymore, as the immigration requirements in the U.S. have become so onerous that few want to deal with the hassle and expense anymore. Which brings me to the United States. The U.S. has never been a welcoming place since the first English colonists hit the shores of the North American continent in the first decade of the 17th century. The first two colonies, Jamestown in Virginia and Plymouth Rock in Massachusetts, were extremely inclusive, being made up of exiled religious extremists calling themselves the Puritans. That mentality is still prevalent in some parts of America's society to this day. In attitudes from the white Christian nationalists, Southern Baptists, and other Protestant sects that come to my mind. Once the English trading companies figured out how much money could be made off the exploitation of all those untapped resources, the doors were open wide to any and all who could afford the passage to the New World. If you couldn't afford the ticket, one would be provided to you as long as you signed a letter of indentured servitude to pay off the debt at an exorbitant interest rate. England also exported a lot of their minor criminals to the colony as well through the decades. Of course, in the case of Australia, they, you know, kind of exported all their criminals, the ones they didn't hang outright. Human traffickers ran amok across England back then, selling the American dream. Only they didn't call it back then. They didn't call it that back then. They sold all these poor people a dream of owning their own homes on a small plot of land, as long as they could tame the land to take possession of it. It was all mostly a lie, but to the ignorant poor living in England's slums, it was better than what they had. It gave them a sense of hope. Years later, once the migrant flows from England started to slow down and the profit margins started to slip, the greedy English capitalists decided they needed to open up immigration to other white Europeans in order to keep the indebted workforce going. So they started advertising in Ireland, Italy, Germany, Scandinavia, and so on, which didn't sit well with the English colonists already in the New World. They were afraid of the different immigrants and scared for their livelihoods. I had this article from a university professor that sums all this up very, very neatly. And I'm going to provide the link to this, to his Medium.com article here in the write-up. This continued throughout the entire history of North America, and is still a part of their culture. There are a lot of white North Americans who are descended from these Europeans that have been scared into thinking that all these Latinos and other darker-skinned immigrants from around the world are going to arrive in so many numbers that they'll be replaced. The idea of a white, European-centric only population still rings hard in a lot of places around North America. I'm including both the U.S. and Canada in this. I've lived near and traveled across Eastern Canada a lot in my life, and I can tell you that there are a lot of people in both countries who have a serious dislike for anyone not like them. This includes the predominantly English-descended and the French-descended peoples in both countries. Which brings me back to the migrations. I started to tell you about this wealthy celebrity of Irish descent who's trying to immigrate to Ireland because she has a minor, non-binary child and is afraid of Trump's government. She's also had a running public feud with Trump for years, as I mentioned. The celebrity made the news again here last week as she said something negative in social media criticizing Trump, and Trump threatened to revoke her citizenship, which he can't do, but that's another story. My point is that she used her wealth to try and buy a house in Ireland, this country of her grandparents' birth, with a severe housing shortage. The only reason she can even attempt this is because she is very wealthy, at least as compared to you or I. Even with her wealth, she has been forced to rent a very expensive row house in Howth, a Dublin suburb, which while she waits for her citizenship application to be approved. These houses where she is currently living are going for a minimum of 1.5 million euros up to 2.5 million euros if you were to try and buy one, which you can't. Meanwhile, a vast majority of native-born Irish can't afford to buy a rundown stone cottage with a thatched roof out in the country, much less anything in a city, for any amount of money. And the governments in Dublin and Belfast wonder why people are so upset. Things are becoming dire all over Europe and North America as they try to deal with all the immigrants fleeing the wars and global warming that they caused. Countries are starting to close their borders. Some of them have started up fascist-like militarized police forces, such as in the U.S. and Britain. Other countries have started severely restricting the amount of immigrants allowed to apply for asylum and immigration, deporting people by the hundreds every week. It's being predicted that once the amount of refugees reaches a critical mass point, some countries will resort to violence to try and keep them out. Some countries like Poland, England, and the United States are already starting to do this by putting military assets on their borders to keep undesirables out. The U.S. is now deploying an enhanced militarized police force around the country, rounding up anyone that looks like an immigrant and placing them in internment camps to be deported without due process to anywhere other than in the United States. Racial profiling is happening all across the country. No one is safe anymore, even if you're a native-born citizen. If you're Latino or someone else with darker skin, may have a non-American-sounding accent or dialect, you're now a possible target. Canada severely restricted their immigration quotas once again in order to stem the tide of asylum seekers that overwhelmed their social services under the last prime minister. Everyone is watching the United States now. They're all wondering what's going to happen to the government there. Will it turn into an authoritarian oligarchy or something else entirely under Trump? Meanwhile, in Europe, all these individual countries that make up the European Union are struggling with the increasing tide of refugees fleeing the wars and poverty of Africa, Middle East, and India. Not that India is at war with anyone, not yet anyway, but they do have a severe poverty issue exacerbated by the increasing climate crisis. The warming climate is melting the glaciers in the Hindu Kush Mountains, causing flooding and water shortages. More severe storms are brewing up in the Indian Ocean in recent years, causing massive flooding. Death and poverty are a constant specter in Southwest Asia these days, which is why so many Indian people are leaving for a better life in the West. The trouble with that is that there are so many people migrating across the world that countries can't take care of them anymore. There are so many Indian migrants heading for Western countries that they're taking over whole industries and housing markets everywhere. I'm seeing this all over North America right now, and I've read a lot of news stories from Ireland and Australia saying the same thing. I'm using Southwest Asians as one example, but this also applies to a lot of other migrants from around the world, all trying to relocate to what they have been led to believe is a better life in the global north. Even Russia is struggling with migrants crossing their borders illegally and taking up social resources that native-born Russians need for themselves. Putin's latest mandate is if they want to immigrate to live there, they have to learn to speak Russian before being granted any status or benefits. They're also deporting people by the hundreds. Every country in the global north is now aggressively deporting undocumented people who are there without any citizenship papers. But can they stop the tide before it overwhelms their social services? That's the biggest question being asked in a lot of government offices everywhere. Europeans have struggled with this for decades with no permanent solution in sight. Australia is close to the edge of modeling Britain and the United States as they struggle hard with refugees showing up seeking asylum. Violence towards any migrants who commit the slightest of offenses, real or not, is becoming normalized by these militarized police forces. A lot of people in government and scientific circles are expressing doubts. What no one is talking about, publicly anyway, is how far are these countries willing to go in order to keep all these unwanted refugees out. As we can see in the United States, that line between a managed immigration system and a panic, where draconian methods are now being deployed, have blurred now under Trump. Britain is drowning in refugees seeking a better life. So is Ireland, along with nearly every other country in the global north. I only see an escalation of violence, whether it's state-sanctioned, such as what we're seeing in the UK and the US, or something more localized in communities struggling to stay afloat amongst all those refugees who are showing up with their different cultures, taking the scant resources from the indigenous peoples already living there. As economies start to go under, more and more people will start taking out their frustrations on the others. I say others, in quotation marks, who showed up in their small communities living on government subsistence while they go hungry and they're homeless. This is as timeless as the human race. If you want to know why countries go to war with one another, the main reason is the economy, or lack thereof. When humans get hungry and desperate, they resort to violence to get what they want. Well, I don't think Europe is ready for war amongst themselves over a lack of resources. They're gearing up, both militarily and mentally, to go to war with Russia. Russia has become the new other in Europe. The United States government is ready, mentally, to go to war with the world at large in order to remain the only superpower. The American people are not on board with going to war. The UK is looking for the US to carry them along to whatever spoils of war they can get from them during their wars of global conquest. We can see how that's working out for them with Trump at the helm. The migrant crisis is not going to end well across the world. As the planet continues to heat up and make more regions too hot to live in, more and more humans will try their best to migrate to more hospitable climates, causing shortages and inciting violence amongst the native-borns who want the resources for themselves. What we're seeing across the world today is just the start of things to come over the next 25 years or so. There's likely to be more small wars take place as countries chase after wealth at the expense of other less developed countries. More borders will close up, and the new economic world orders will replace old ones. The United States, things will continue to deteriorate as Trump continues to flail around pretending like he knows what he's doing. I predict that there will be more and more violent clashes between migrants, protesters, and the new ICE Gestapo police force, like we saw in the news last weekend. Trump has given ICE the green light to defend themselves. So you know what that means. There'll be more dead and wounded soon if people continue to resist. There were two migrants who died from the attack last weekend, one by accident as he fell off a 30-foot roof in his attempt to escape. One of the people they rounded up was a native-born disabled Army veteran. He tried to run, and they broke into his car, pepper sprayed him, and locked him up. What the American people need to understand is that Trump doesn't care. This is the president who asked his staff why the police couldn't shoot D.C. protesters in the legs during his first term. Now he wants to escalate from rubber bullets to real ones. Trump is setting up gulag internment camps that are run by private companies, which are not designed to handle the thousands and soon to be millions of immigrants that ICE plans to round up eventually. Now, with this new rule outlawing bond hearings, these detainees won't see the outside of their prisons until they're deported, whenever that might be. As one analyst put it yesterday, they could be in these gulags for years, living in horrific conditions. If the U.S. is trying to mimic the Russian Siberian gulags, this is a good start. This is on top of one of his government cabinet officials declaring publicly that poor American citizens who want to apply for Medicaid benefits could replace the farm workers being rounded up on farms across the country. As multiple people said in response, that ain't going to happen. Americans are too lazy and out of shape to even attempt work like that, unless you want to force them at gunpoint. Even if they were starving, they wouldn't make it. Forget about the disabled. With 38 stand-your-ground states, 29 states being permitless, 25 states are open carry without a permit, with all 50 states having individual concealed carry laws, ICE had better start rethinking their strategy. I've said this before. If a bunch of masked, unidentified men came towards me and my immigrant wife in an aggressive manner, I live in a state that allows me to defend myself, and I would. How long before we start seeing open gun battles between American citizens and ICE agents as they continue to snatch people and detain them in horrific detention centers? Now is the time for Americans and Europeans to ask themselves, how far are you willing to go to let your governments take this in order to keep the migrants out of your countries? What is more important, saving the country's resources for the native-borns at any cost, or figure out a more humane way to deal with the migrant crisis? The answer is rather simple, really. Number one, stop killing people and devastating other less developed countries for their resources. If we could figure out a way for everyone to have equitable shares of the world's resources, everybody would win. No one country should be able to dictate what another sovereign nation can do with their resources. Trade with them on an equal basis, and everyone wins, mostly. The planet doesn't need insanely wealthy people running around telling people what to do. Imagine if all that wealth could be distributed equally amongst the people of the world. Majority of the refugees wouldn't feel the need to migrate away from the world they know and away from their family and friends. We wouldn't have genocides like the ones in Palestine, Rwanda, Bosnia, and others that make us all sick to our stomachs. There will be enough money to help all those affected by the climate crisis. I realize that this is all a pipe dream because humans haven't evolved enough to stop their tribalism yet. So what we're seeing on the world stage today is a precursor of what's to come as more and more poor refugees leave their war and storm-ravaged lands to find a safer place to live, and the people already there push back hard to keep them out. I hope I've given folks something to think about. I'm already working on next week's podcast about how energy may someday in the near future be the catalyst that breaks up the union of 50 states they call the United States. So I'll be right back after this break to read another chapter for The Priest by Michael Campy. I want to take a couple of minutes to explain how you can support what I'm doing here, either through a direct donation, a subscription, or purchasing my book. First, let me say I don't monetize my work up front, but I'm not adverse to asking for donations of any amount or currency on my website for paid subscriptions to my Substack page if you have the ability to do so. My annual or monthly subscription rates are as low as Substack will allow, if that helps. If nothing else, like, follow, restack, or sign up for a free subscription and share with anyone you wish to add my voice to the many in the independent media who don't like what's happening to people around the world. I may not be able to join any street protests, but I can surely protest here. I appreciate everyone who tunes in to watch, listen, or read my thoughts about how all of this is affecting us. I realize that I'm just one voice among the many, but that's how a rebellion gets its start. We start by raising our collective voices to be heard loud and clear by those who would attempt to take away our rights and freedoms. Americans had one rebellion in the 1770s to stop a tyrant, but we can always start another one. In Ireland, they've had many a rebellion through the centuries to stop the tyrant kings of the past, so my ancestors have a lot of experience with that. Let me finish up by showing you this little video about my dystopian fiction story I wrote, Fugitives in the United States. If this story sounds interesting, go to any major book retailer around the world to order it, or order a hardcover or paperback version on my website and read it for yourself. The way things are starting to go in the U.S., the story may not be fiction for much longer. Watch this video and decide for yourself if you think the story is starting to become a reality now.
James had one dream: to save lives. But in a country torn apart by hate and fear, his own life became the ultimate battle. A new government driven by prejudice. A system that left no room for those like him, immigrant, Muslim, and brown skin. Forced to abandon his life and live as a fugitive, he fought to survive in a country that saw him as an enemy. Every step brought new risks and unexpected alliances. But in the darkest moments, love found him. And together, they discovered that even in a state of despair, hope could still bloom. This is the story of one man's fight for freedom, survival, and love.
Welcome back. So now let me pull up the next episode of The Priest here. And we will read the next chapter. So, like always, I'm going to pull it up here and let you read it without my face in the way. And you can read along with me a little bit. The Priest, formerly known as Bob, Part 37 by Michael Campy. The killer inside me. I was aware of bouncing along the ground, being dragged by my feet and my hands tied. There were rocks and weird alien thorn plants that were tearing my clothes, cutting me up, and in something that tasted like a dirty rag soaked in piss, stuffed in my mouth. But I didn't want to think about that. Is there some kind of apocalypse version of the Geneva Convention that prohibits cruel and unusual punishment? It might not cover getting hit in the head with a rock. And about that term, cruel and unusual. Isn't all punishment cruel and unusual? I mean, it's punishment, right? So isn't that by default cruel? I don't think punishment was ever unusual unless you grew up in a Christian household. I had always fancied myself to be quite the killer. I think most guys do, having been raised on images of tough guys, spies, and special ops soldiers. We had managed to convince ourselves that we too had the capacity to best an opponent in combat and come out bloodied but victorious. That image of myself had been reinforced when I had, in a moment of adrenaline-fueled rage, killed someone with a stick. Then I met Dolly. Dolly was an actual killer, not the made-up killer that I was. He had killed people before, and I watched him slice those guys into pieces outside of Ash Fork, and that sight had humbled me a bit. It humbled me a lot, and I began to think of myself as maybe a bench warmer on the killer team, because there was no way I could ever be let in the game with people like Dolly around. And I never had given much thought to how a rock to the head kind of knocks the killer right out of you. The dragging stopped. I was lifted to my feet and someone slapped me in the face, pulled a rag out of my mouth, and threw a bucket of sand over my face. Fuck, I sputtered, spitting in sand and dirt out of my mouth and trying to blink the shit out of my eyes. He's awake, said a voice. Why did you throw sand in my face? It was supposed to be water to wake you up, but water's at a premium, and we didn't want to waste it on you. A pair of very large hands grabbed my ears and lifted my head up. I had never really seen anyone as large as the man in front of me. He was dressed in full-on combat drag, from the boots to the bray on his head, with some sort of insignia on it. So, you're the priest. We heard about you after you killed the real priest near Jerome. I thought you'd be bigger. Still trying to get the sand out of my mouth, I said, you kind of take first place in the big department. Maybe I just look small because you're, well, freakishly big. I'm going to take that as a compliment because I don't want to hurt you just now. That's comforting. We've been watching you for a while. That's what Dolly said. Who's Dolly? He took over the leadership after we met him in Sedona. Really? Why is that? He's good at things that the rest of us aren't good at. What would those things be? Seems to be someone who is not only good at killing, but enjoys it. I'd like to meet this Dolly. I don't think you would. He doesn't take to people right off, and I don't think he'd take to you. Why would you think that? Don't I seem friendly and accessible? Not right off. He did throw a rock at my head, tie me up, drag me through the dirt, slap me, and then throw a bucket of sand in my face. That's true. But in our defense, we do think of you people as our enemies, and we're a little upset about you sneaking into our camp and killing one of our people. In my defense, it wasn't me that killed your guy. Semantics. It was one of you. And if one of you is our enemy, then all of you are enemies. Isn't that stereotyping? He stared at me like I was crazy. Are you like this all the time? Like what? Argumentative and kind of waffly? Waffly? That's a word I made up, and it seems to fit. Why would you call me waffly? Maybe a better would be weak, ineffectual, and cowardly. That's three words. That's what I'm talking about, right there. Who are you? I asked. Sorry, I neglected to formally introduce myself. My name is Colonel Kurtz. Like the Heart of Darkness, Colonel Kurtz? You know about that? Doesn't everyone? No, and you have no idea how refreshing it is to meet someone who's read that book. I'd almost be tempted to give you a pass just based on that. Almost tempted? Give me a pass on what? Well, eventually we're going to kill you all. But right now we're doing our due diligence to make sure that we are unanimous in that decision. We loosely function as a benevolent dictatorship, although I do have the last word in pretty much everything. What happens if not everyone agrees? First, I try to convince them that my superior intellect, advanced knowledge of survival, and inhuman physical abilities and strength makes my decisions more right than theirs. If that doesn't bring them around, I will attempt to beat some sense into them, and if that doesn't work, then I kill them. It's a workable system. Sounds a little bit one-sided. Too many cooks. I'm not going to kill you, though. We have no idea how good it is to hear you say that. I do want to send a message to your Dolly. He's not really my Dolly. I mean, he doesn't belong to me. He doesn't belong to anyone. We kind of share him, but not the way you might think. There you go again, being weird and waffly. I didn't think I was. Please stop. We're going to send a message to Dolly, and none of those other things you said matter. I'll be glad to take a message to him. That's good. It's going to be less something you take and more something you become. Now, who's being weird and waffly? Kurtz waved three more men over and nodded. The first punch knocked me to the ground, and I felt the blood in my mouth. I was pulled to my feet and pummeled. It felt like being in front of a pitching machine that fired hardball after hardball at my stomach and head. The men who were holding me dropped me to the ground, and then all of them began kicking me over and over and over, and the impression I got was it would never stop, but then it did. I felt myself being picked up, then I lost consciousness. Appreciate everybody tuning in. I hope you like the story. That was on chapter 37. He's got like 50 some chapters written so far. So it's quite the serial novel. I haven't read all of them. I read them as I pick them up once a week. So I appreciate everybody tuning in. Gora Mahagit. Thank you for listening and watching. I hope you enjoyed it. You'll return again to listen to the news and stories I find every week. Say goodbye this week. I wish to leave you with this rebel quote. To be a rebel is to refuse to accept the status quo, to challenge the powers that be, and to fight for a better future. Schlongo Foyle.